The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is New York State Assemblyman Richard Gottfried, a Manhattan Democrat who represents New York's 75th Assembly District. Assemblyman Dick Gottfried has been chair of the Assembly Health Committee since 1987, making him one of the brightest and most well-informed people about health in New York State. Welcome, Dick Gottfried. Always great to talk to you.
Well, thank you. Always a pleasure.
Now, you started out as the youngest guy in the Assembly. Are you now the oldest guy in the Assembly?
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure I'm not the oldest. I am the longest-serving Assembly member in the history of the state.
Wow!
And actually, I crossed that line when I hit 40 years in the Assembly. I'm now in my 50th year. You may remember State Senator John Markey from Staten Island.
Indeed, I remember.
Served 50 years, but a reporter told me a while ago that my 50 years will have one more leap year than John Markey's did. So I will beat him by one day.
How do you feel about that? How does that longevity figure into your psyche?
Well, you know, the old saying, if you find a job that you love, you'll never have to work a day in your life.
I got that. I
consider myself just enormously lucky to be able to do what I do. I think you feel the same way.
I do. Do you live on the west side of Manhattan?
I do. I live on the west side, although the bulk of my district is Chelsea and Hell's Kitchen for Manhattan aficionados.
And you share some of that territory with Congressman Nadler, who we all know so well and with whom you were affiliated early in life, weren't you?
Well, Jerry Nadler represents most of my district. Little of it is Carolyn Maloney. And yeah, Jerry and I met in the week we arrived at Stuyvesant High School in 1961, and we
really?
Both joined the debating team. And we've been best friends ever since.
Wow, that's incredible.
So, and I sometimes point out to people that Jerry got his start in politics, winning every office in sight in student government at high school. And I made all his campaign posters with oak tag and felt tip markers.
Wow.
That's a claim to fame.
It is. Let's talk a little bit, Dick Gottfried, about the health committee.
Yeah.
What's the health of New York State health right now? Can we do better? Is there anything that you're seeing that is disturbing to you?
Well, there's a lot we could do better. As New Yorkers, we assume that everything here in New York must be the best there is. And yet, if you look at, you know, in infection rates and all kinds of indicators of bad care, a lot of our hospitals are really not up to par. A lot of our nursing homes are way below par. And for individual patients, you know, every year, millions of New Yorkers go without needed health care because they can't afford it or suffer financial hardship to get it. And these are all people with health insurance. But because of deductibles and copays and out-of-network charges and whatnot, they can't afford the health care they need.
So what's the fix?
Well, I think I've always said that almost every problem we face in health care in New York is made worse and harder to solve by the way we pay for health care. And that's why I've been so focused on trying to enact the New York Health Act, a bill to create single-payer coverage in New York, which would eliminate deductibles and copays and restricted provider networks and out-of-network charges. By getting insurance companies out of the picture, we no longer have to finance the 20 or so billion we pay them for administrative costs and profit. Doctors and hospitals would spend dramatically less on administrative costs than they now do. We'd have the bargaining clout to force down drug prices. and people would get the health care that they need without suffering financial hardship.
Well, how is that program going along? Obviously, we all know we would have to be pretty naive not to understand that the insurance companies are going to fight you like the Dickens on that because they don't want to go out of business. But it's New York City, which has a sort of liberal bent. How's your progress?
Well, you know, there's a lot of New Yorkers, a lot of legislators who have signed on as co-sponsors. The bill has passed the assembly four times by roughly 2-1 margins. In the labor movement, there's a long list of some of New York's most progressive and powerful unions that are sick and tired of spending all their time at the bargaining table, bargaining about to try to protect the union health plan, and they're supporting the bill. There are some unions, particularly the public employee unions, that are opposing the bill. And that's because they have negotiated very good deals with the state and New York City, and they're concerned, will we have as good a deal under the New York Health Act? I think it's pretty plain that they will have a dramatically better deal under a single-payer plan, but convincing people of that is not easy.
So you pass the assembly and it gets to the Senate. What happens there now that the Democrats control it?
Right, because when we had a Republican Senate, it wasn't going anywhere there. In the Senate, we are now one vote shy of having a majority of the Senate signed on as co-sponsors. There's a fair number, particularly a lot of the new suburban Democrats, who are concerned about a lot of issues. And, you know, when somebody says, oh, my God, this is going to cost a zillion dollars in taxes, that's very scary, because what you don't hear is that while it might cost a zillion dollars, it would save a whole lot more than a zillion dollars. And so almost every New Yorker would be spending a lot less under New York Health than they now spend for health coverage. But it's an uphill climb to get anything passed that has the word tax in it.
Okay, so first, let me ask you this. We've now gone through the assembly. You're talking about the Democrats coming around in the Senate, assuming that their leadership isn't going to put a hold on it. But then let's go to the governor. What is he thinking?
Well, you know, the governor has said that he thinks single payer is the sensible thing to do, but he feels it needs to be done at the national level. As far as I'm concerned, he's taking one of the stronger positions on single payer of any governor, because he says, you know, on the merits, it's the right thing to do. I imagine when we get to the point where we've got the votes in the state Senate as well as the assembly, Senator Gustavo Rivera and I, who's our Senate sponsor, we will be called down to the governor's office to have a serious discussion. And hopefully what comes out of that discussion is some modifications that will preserve the principles of the bill and we'll get something done. That's what happened 5 years ago, 6 years ago with medical marijuana. The governor wouldn't even talk to anybody about it. And when it was ready to pass both houses, all of a sudden he called me and Senator Diane Savino down to his office and we had a serious conversation and a law got passed.
Not quite yet, Dick Gottfried. You know, I talk to him a lot these days on the air, and he's got it in the state budget, but he hasn't got the legalization of adult, you know, marijuana yet.
Adult use, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, his attitude towards marijuana has changed dramatically
It's evolved.
I don't know, 2 or 3 or 4 years.
Yes, it has. There's no question about it. And I tell him that all the time. So let's talk a little bit about that. And then let's go back to the New York Health Act and talk about what actually is in it. So marijuana, he once described to me as a gateway drug, something he didn't want to do. And then, as you say, he had a sort of a liberal catharsis and he is now for it. So let's leave that alone for a minute. Let's go to what's in the New York Act.
The New York Health Act?
Yes.
It would create, you know, nationally they're calling it Medicare for All. It would be complete, comprehensive health coverage, including long-term care. Almost nobody now has health coverage for long-term care. It would cover every resident of New York. it would be funded not through premiums and deductibles and copays and the like, but through a progressively graduated tax on income. You would have complete choice of doctors and hospitals and other providers. There would be no restricted provider network. It would cover more benefits than any health plan I know of, and that's all written into the bill. The New York Health Act tax, when it's levied on payroll, would be paid 80% or more by your employer. You would pay up to 20%, although presumably through collective bargaining, the employer could pay a lot more than 80%. And those tax rates would be dramatically lower than anybody is now paying for health insurance premiums. And we know what the savings are going to be, and we can estimate what the tax brackets will have to be, because there have been numerous studies, both here in New York and nationally, of state and national single-payer programs. And they almost all agree on the level of savings and what we would have to raise to pay for the care minus all of those savings. And consistently, unless you're one of the really very wealthiest New Yorkers, you will be paying dramatically less under the New York Health Act than you're spending on health coverage and care today.
So when taxes go up, people tend to migrate to Florida, go to other places. You think that'll happen?
I don't think so. You know, everybody believes that. But if you look at the data, every time, you know, over the years when New York has raised taxes, which we do from time to time on top bracket people, there's the gloom and doom that, oh, my God, rich people are going to move to Florida or New Jersey or whatever. And there's never any evidence of it happening. I mean, there's always, you know, somebody who moves out of town, but there's always somebody who moves out of town. Tom Golisano moved to Florida. A lot of people moved to Florida. It suited his politics to announce that he was moving because of New York taxes. It might also have had to do with the weather.
Donald Trump moved.
Yes. Well, that's because, well, I don't know why, but, you know, 60 or so years ago, my grandparents moved to Florida. It wasn't because of the taxes. It was because they wanted the warm weather.
Let's talk a little bit about Medicaid. The governor is behind the eight ball. We all know that. The state is spending more than it takes in. He's got a huge budget deficit, $6 billion, I think it is. And he's saying it's all because the counties are spending too much. True or false?
A large part of that is completely false. You know, the growth in Medicaid spending in New York is more than the artificial cap that he got us to enact 9 years ago. But that's not because people are spending like crazy. It's because healthcare inflation all across the country has gone up faster. It's because more and more people are older and older and needing home care or nursing home care, and that's one of the more expensive parts of Medicaid. And this notion that it's all the fault of the counties or any part of it is baloney. A very small part of enrollment in Medicaid is handled by the counties. It's almost all handled by the state. Even when counties do it, they're following rigorous rules with state rules, and the state, you know, audits this. The amount of care that people get or what is paid for it is entirely controlled by the state or by Medicaid managed care plans that in turn are regulated by the state. And by the way, the fact that almost all the Medicaid program has been moved into private insurance companies is because that's what the governor wanted. And so if he's not happy with the managed care plans, I agree with him. We spend an awful lot of money on administrative costs of Medicaid managed care plans. But B, he's the one who demanded we do that.
Dick Gottfried, chairman of the health committee, let me talk to you about the coronavirus. Are you being kept updated as the chair of the health committee, number one? And what is your sense of our risk here?
Well, I get briefings on it from both the state and city health departments. They're very good about that. Both state and city health departments are very good at dealing with, infectious diseases. I often say to people, do you remember the horrible Ebola situation in New York back in 2014? And people say, no. And I say, exactly, because we had a couple of cases in New York, and the New York City Health and Hospitals Corporation and the health department handled it amazingly well. So that's a part of the system that they're very good at. And so far, whether it's luck or otherwise, it has not been a significant problem in New York, at least not yet. But they're very much on the lookout and monitoring it. And if cases begin to break out, I think New York will do a very professional, solid job of isolating patients and treating patients.
Dick Gottfried, I know that you have been on the liberal side of the New York State political sphere for a while, and right now there's a huge fight over bail reform as to whether or not, and the governor said it may need some tweaks. Your speaker, to whom you report, obviously, and you remember that conference, mm-hmm. Is for not messing with it until we see more. Where are you?
Yeah. I think Carl Hastie, the speaker, is on the right track. There's a lot of feeling that a lot of the problems that police and prosecutors have been pointing to are almost manufactured. I mean, there are people who, when you hear on the radio what they are accused of doing, they ought to have been arrested and indicted for crimes that were not covered by the bail reform law, which was meant to apply basically to nonviolent offenses.
Dick, let's just make sure everybody understands what we're talking about, although I doubt there is anybody out there at this stage of the game. Bail reform means rich people get out pretty easily on bail because they got the money, and poor people don't, and they languish in jail. And so there's this bail reform, and there have been accusations that people get out and they commit other crimes. But you're pointing out that this bill, which passed both and was signed, is there because, it's just been an unfair system. What are you making of it?
Well, and also it doesn't abolish the whole notion of bail. It ended it for, certainly it was intended to end it for nonviolent crimes. Now, if somebody can make a case that this category of crime or that category of crime was put on the wrong side of the line and should be moved, we can all look at that. But the basic concept of the bill, I think, is 100% sound, and I think it's working very well. I think we've got to see whether some of the cases that have been pointed to are really unfairly being blamed on the bail reform law.
Apparently, there's more trepidation about this bail reform in the Senate than there is in the Assembly. The Senate just went Democratic, and there's a sense mm-hmm. that we may lose the Senate because people are so apprehensive about this change. There's a question somewhere.
I've been in the legislature long enough that I can remember when we took the majority in the Assembly away from the Republicans after the Watergate landslide in 74. And for several years, our majority depended on a bunch of newly elected Assembly members whose control of their seats was pretty marginal. And that can make you very nervous about a lot of issues. And that's part of what's going on in the state Senate. They've got a large bunch of freshmen, many of them from districts that historically elected Republicans. And so they're very nervous. And, I can sympathize with that. I think it's a responsibility of those of us who support the new law to look carefully at whether there are sensible changes that can be made, and to make the case that a lot of the news that's out there is really miscalculating what's going on.
Mike Bloomberg, certainly you've lived through the Bloomberg administration when he was mayor. Mm-hmm. Mike Bloomberg is soaring in the polls. He's not caught up to Bernie Sanders by any means yet. I'm going to guess that you're supporting Sanders. Is that right?
Well, I have not endorsed anybody at this point. I think my list is Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders because I really like their policies, particularly on health care, and I think they have a very powerful message to working voters who, many of whom voted for Trump because they found the Democratic Party was not paying attention to them on economic issues. And Sanders and Warren would change that. You know, Bloomberg, on an awful lot of issues, I really liked him as mayor. You know, I've always said I've been spitting angry at every mayor in my adult lifetime over something or other, Bloomberg among them. But, you know, if I had to pick the mayor out of all the people who've been mayor in my lifetime, you know, before de Blasio, I would pick Bloomberg. He's a level-headed, very competent, sensible official, and very progressive on a lot of very important issues. Obviously, there are gaps in his progressivism, but that's probably true of, except for Sanders and Warren, I think that's true of everybody in the field.
So Dick Gottfried, if in fact Bloomberg is soaring in the polls, let's say, gets the nomination, Dick Gottfried, mm-hmm. would you support him for president?
Oh, certainly. I mean, I'm one of those people who would say I'd pick a name picked at random from the phone book because I think Donald Trump is enormously dangerous in any number of very profound ways. But I would feel very good about the country being in Mike Bloomberg's hands, certainly more so than any of the other moderate candidates in the field.
He was
superb on gun control, on public health, on abortion, on a lot of very important issues.
So let me very quickly go to how much available blood is there out there. And I know that you're sponsoring some legislation in order to get people to give more blood. How are we going to do that?
Well, I have a bill which the governor vetoed once. We're hoping to change his mind to provide a program of state grants for community blood drives. I think we can get a lot more blood out of New Yorkers if the state were helping to get the word out a lot more. And it is critically important. You know, we've moved towards enabling people under the age of 18 to sign up to donate. So we can do a whole lot better than we do, and we need to. The same is true with organ donation. And we just passed in New York, after many years of trying, a bill to match our law on organ donation with the Uniform Anatomical Gifts Act that I think almost every other state has enacted that will help ease the process for getting consent for donating organs and save a lot of lives.
You know, it sounds to me like a great television series, Law and Organ. Sorry about that.
Right.
Couldn't help myself. Well, Dick Gottfried, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. You and I go back a long, long way.
Yeah.
We're still out there, still tromping along, and you're a good guy. And thank you so much for spending all of this time with us. And
well, thank you, and I am a loyal listener.
I know, and not only that, you're a loyal contributor. So
right.
We're out of time. Our guest has been New York State Assemblyman Richard Gottfried. Dick, thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.